I think the next thing to do is check yourself against other laboratories. Participate in these CAP accreditation programs that have now become, especially with the new ASCO CAP guidelines, are becoming much, much more rigorous. In fact, some pathologists, especially in smaller institutions, would use the word onerous rather than rigorous because they don't even have enough cases in some situations to meet the quality control recommended guidelines.
I'm still looking for some clarity here. I mean, again, we've got a therapy that looks like it can reduce recurrence rate 50%. We cannot get this wrong. Okay, so Richard, what's the answer?
I think it would be nice if it were possible and feasible to have national certification of HER2 testing in individual laboratories that would be voluntary on the part of the laboratory, but physicians don't have to use laboratories that don't volunteer to participate in it, which the central organization, whatever it is, sends out standardized materials at random, unknown times, and standardized materials that have been determined in terms of their true HER2 status, and they then give feedback to the laboratories and to the public of the sensitivity and specificity of HER2 testing in that laboratory at that point in time.
So was that discussed in that panel?
So it is, and I think this is one of the key issues behind the actual guideline creation, is that the next step has been from CAP in terms of educating, disseminating the information to pathologists, but then also to provide them with the tools, with the analytical tools, so they can not only deal with the initial assay validation, but also ongoing proficiency in testing on a twice-a-year basis.
So that's not in place, right?
It's being put in place now by CAP.
So the when decision, will that be available?
They are working out the final kinks. The decision was that the first year of implementation of the guidelines into 2008 was going to focus mostly on education. But beginning very soon, within the next several months into 2009, the true issue of ongoing proficiency testing done on a twice-yearly basis will take place. And I think one of the things that the clinicians can look for when they're looking in terms of asking questions to the pathologist. Right now, a lot of the reports come with the language in the footnote. The assay was done using FDA-approved analytes. That's not enough. And I think the language should move into, is this lab a participant in CAP ongoing proficiency testing? CAP is not the only entity that can do proficiency testing in a mandatory way in the U.S. And some states like Maryland actually is exempt from that specific requirement. But there is language that we put in the guideline. It would be either compliant with the CAP process or similar. Also, the other thing we did as part of the CAP ASCO panel was to involve the payers, to involve CMS, to involve the FDA and CLIA, so that also predictive markers become part of the CLIA certification that many labs have to undergo. Right now, a lab may say that they are CLIA certified, but that by itself is not enough to say that they are doing that specific predictive marker in a high-quality fashion. So it's a little bit of the sticks and the carrots. It's almost like at this point in the U.S., anybody can do HER2 testing. But if you want to do it, there is implications, and it could even get to the point that you're not potentially going to get paid for doing the HER2 test if you're not undergoing this onerous, I agree, ongoing proficiency testing. One final comment also I think has to do with the issue of volumes, which is, I would say, it's a surrogate for quality, but I would call it potentially a poor surrogate, as we well know in the example that I gave of a large central commercial lab not using a pathologist for their testing is huge. And many of you may be aware of a huge scandal taking place in Canada right now on estrogen receptor testing in one of the provinces done in a centralized fashion that was found to be incorrect. But if I use the own example of my own hospital at Johns Hopkins, we actually would not be considered a high volume lab because we do less than 100 HER2 tests a month. And that was one of the definitions used by the NSABP initially, whether you did more than 100 or less than 100. So Hopkins would be considered a low-volume lab with less than 100.
So, I mean, why are you doing that? I mean, the whole system makes no sense to me.
And so the way we dealt with this, and actually the other issue that was attached to that, is that we early on, especially in the early phases, in the early 2000s, we had various pathologists interpreting the test results. So you're not just talking about the lab variability, you're talking about the pathology variability. Just go back to tumor grade to get an idea of what might be happening. And what we did in a couple of years ago was actually centralize the immunohistochemistry assays under one very small group of individuals so that you have ongoing validation and training of a very small group of individuals to ensure consistency across the board.